Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, January 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. On this first Food Friday of 2020, we fill up our mugs with some delicious coffee and tea. Here to discuss these beverages that keep newsrooms running are two guests. Ron Greco is with Stack's Espresso Bar, which has two locations in Albany and one in Newton, Massachusetts. And Michael Harney comes to us by way of Harney & Sons Fine Teas in Soho and Millerton. If you have a question about coffee beans or tea leaves, give us a call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Coffee, tea, and your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's one of the first things you grab in the morning. It's your mug. You pull up a seat, you turn up the radio, and you get yourself a nice cup of coffee. We have coffee and tea experts in the studio with us today. If you want to talk coffee or tea, or both, Ron Greco is the director of the coffee program at Stack's Espresso Bar. Stack's, which has two locations in Albany, one in Troy, and another in Newton, Massachusetts, is a multi-roaster, which means it regularly features coffee from other roasters. It also sells its own coffee beans and coffee-making equipment while offering brewing classes and competitions. Michael Harney is the master tea buyer and blender of Harney & Sons Fine Teas. He is an author and educator who loves to scour the globe, meeting with tea producers from all the major tea regions, looking for the best teas. If you have a question about coffee or tea, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. I would imagine with the amount of caffeine in the room, the pace of the show will pick up as we go along. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Michael Harney and Ron Greco, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Very exciting to have you here, and Happy New Year to you both. I love coffee. I love tea, so this is a good show for me. What is that sound?
That is the kettle brewing. Hold on.
You're brewing? No, it's okay.
Boiling.
You're boiling? Yeah. So you're boiling water now.
Yep.
And Ron, you're going to make coffee in what way?
So I have some coffee made that we did on the batch brew at the coffee shop.
Yep.
It's one of the coffees we roasted. It's from a single farmer called Nilberto Ojeda. It's a single farmer Colombian coffee that we sourced from Collaborative
this
Coffee
is the
Source.
One here?
That's the one you're drinking.
It's beautiful.
Right? It's very nice. It's got kind of a, you know, medium body, balanced acidity, like a brown sugar sweetness. It's not too far afield, but it's very sweet, and it showcases that specific farmer's work, which we're pretty excited about.
You know, I love the fact that you say it's nice and sweet, because there is nothing, there is no sugar, there is nothing in this, right? This
yeah.
is straight up.
Good coffee shouldn't need sugar.
Exactly. Now, you know, in some houses, perhaps my own, we have the coffee maker go off at about 4:30 in the morning, and, you know, it's just the usual coffee. And, you know, my wife will put a little of the creamer in, and I prefer it just straight up like this. And I rarely get it. But when you get a good cup of coffee,
yeah.
it has character all its own.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't really need anything else.
Absolutely. We're also going to be brewing up a natural processed Geisha Village coffee from Black and White Coffee Roasters. That's from Ethiopia. Geisha Village is the birthplace of a sort of famed coffee varietal called Geisha.
Yeah. When you say natural process, what are you talking about?
So natural process means that the bean, which is actually a seed, is dried entirely inside of the coffee cherry. So coffee is, you know, it's a coffee tree, a
right.
coffee plant,
yep.
and it fruits. It's a fruiting tree. And
can you eat the fruit?
You can eat the fruit.
Is
yeah.
it good?
Yeah, I've had a coffee cherry. They're, you know, they're kind of tart,
yeah.
Kind of sweet.
Yeah.
So there's the cherry, and then there's sort of a slimy covering called a mucilage, and then there's the coffee seed on the inside. And so a washed processed coffee, which the Nilberto Ojeda Colombia is, this is a very basic
sure.
version of processing.
That's about all I can handle.
Essentially, you soak the cherry, you send the cherry through a depulper. You wash the cherry by letting it sit in water for, you know, 18 to 72 hours. You sort of It gets kind of raked over, which washes off the mucilage, and then it gets set out on either concrete patios or raised beds to dry, and then it dries, you know, over a period of time. So that's a washed coffee. Natural processed coffee is just dried entirely inside the cherry.
Yeah.
So there's some amount of natural fermentation that happens as the sugars, you know.
What's the advantage? I mean, taste-wise.
It's a different flavor profile. It's all preference. There's also honey processed, where you remove the cherry but dry it inside the mucilage. And each one of them has their own sort of flavor profile that is contingent on both the processing method, but also where it's grown,
yeah,
if it's harvested properly, if all the beans are the same size, you know, a million different factors.
Harvested properly. How do you improperly harvest it?
So there's a lot of stuff that goes into harvesting, but essentially the best coffees are picked at peak ripeness.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the cherries are a dark shade of red, not overripe, you know, not
so these are actual cherries.
Purple. Yeah.
Can you make booze out of the cherries? Have you ever tried that?
I haven't tried. I don't have a ton of access to coffee cherries.
Okay. But all right.
I'm sure most people have made booze out of most things that you can make booze out of. So if it's possible, someone probably has.
Because if this is my idea, I'm onto something here.
There is a drink called cascara where the coffee cherry, you know, the skins, basically the meat of the coffee cherry, gets dried and turned into a tea.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of tea, let's welcome Michael Harney and Harney & Sons Fine Teas. Nice to have you here.
Well, it's always a pleasure.
Happy New Year to you. And you brought a New Year's brew.
I brought some of our 2020 Lunar New Year. Now, Lunar New Year is the 25th of January, so it's a little early, but it does say 2020 on it.
Okay. And tell us about this tea.
Well, this is a tea that my son Emmerich came up with that has, it's a black tea, and then it's like a Chinese dessert. So it's got coconut and
I love that
sesame and caramel flavors on that. So it's a fun tea. You know, we sell around the world, so some's going over to Korea and other places where they'll have the Lunar New Year going on the 25th.
I don't know too much about. Well, I don't know too much about much, but one thing I don't know anything about is how you prepare tea. And you mentioned coconut, and there's some fruity flavors and aromas in there, too. How do you get those into the tea?
Well, we use natural flavors, and then we add, like, coconut pieces and sesame seeds, and then liquid natural flavors and tumbler, a little bit like they would do with coffee if they were to flavor a coffee.
And then you roast it? Or
No.
Dry it?
Tea comes in pretty much all done. It's not like coffee where they have to do that great step down in Lark Street, right, in Albany.
Well, you wrote that down, didn't you?
I did. Well, that's right, Mike, in front of me. In any event, the tea comes in dry, and then we just either add flavors or sell it by itself. So I brought some straight teas. Ron is trying out some of the wild tea that we got from China.
What's that?
Well, it's a wild tea from Hunan province. We're calling it Anxi. In fact, they call it Anxi Wild, and it's a black tea again, too.
Can I try the 2020 at some point?
You got it right in front of you there.
Oh, troopers. I didn't even know that. Oh, nice mug, too.
Well, you know, a nice guy.
Now, I let my wild tea steep for 7 minutes.
5 minutes would be okay, but seven's best. Seven
works. I
was
talking, and I totally forgot.
I said I'm an artist, not a scientist.
Okay, cool.
Now, has this been adorned with any sweetener of any kind?
No, sir.
Boy, it's
well, just like that, you can make tea that has natural sweetness. It harnesses the energy from the sun. The plant then, when it's growing, converts the sunlight into glucose. And that's if you work with it right, it has natural sweetness to it.
I'm loving that.
Well, that's good news.
And how would you – these are not in bags, obviously. Do you have a diffuser?
Oh, yes. So he has he had his loose in there, and then we also do sachets.
Yeah.
So we do both of them.
Well, that I got to tell you, that's some great stuff. Let's grab a call or two before we go – to our first break. The number is 800-348-2551. We got your coffee covered with Ron Greco. We got your tea covered with Michael Harney. And let's go to Ryan in Warwick, New York. Ryan, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was just about to put up a cup of coffee right now when the show came on, so this is perfect timing. I really like a good cup of espresso. But, you know, I don't always get to go out to buy one at a cafe, and I used one of those little Bialetti mocha pots on the stovetop. you know, understanding that it's not going to be the same as getting it in a cafe. Whenever I make it on the stove, it always seems to be kind of like a bitter taste or kind of like a burnt taste, you know, so I have to mix like milk and everything. And is there anything I can do to get that stovetop espresso to work better?
I hate this question every time I get asked it because I've never brewed on a Bialetti, and my brother-in-law asks me every time how to do it better, and I don't have a great answer for him. But typically—
Can you get your brother-in-law on the phone?
I don't think he does well right now anyway. I think typically if you're tasting that sort of burnt, bitter flavor, usually that means over-extraction. And over-extraction is when you've pulled out all of the essentially good-tasting soluble components in coffee, and then you start— you know, kind of edging into some of the bad tasting ones. So
hang on. So the good stuff comes out first? Or can there be some bad stuff that comes out
first? The good stuff comes out in the middle. Acids typically come out first. So if it's under extracted, it's going to taste very sour. And then you sort of need that middle part and a little bit of bitterness to balance that sourness.
So what you're saying is optimum extraction.
Yeah. Optimum extraction, precisely.
Carry on.
So, you know, with stovetop espresso, you're grinding very fine and you're using it on high heat. So I would try to keep it just under a boil. Boiling is going to, you know, the more heat there is, the more extraction there is. Also, the finer it's ground, the more extraction there is. And you're kind of trying to walk that thin line of getting the maximum possible extraction without edging into over-extraction, getting those bitter flavors out. So
should I be taking notes?
Yeah, you definitely should.
Hey, Ryan, are you getting any of this?
So try to ride the edge right before a boil, and don't be afraid to sort of pop it on and off of the stove to, you know, keep it from over-boiling.
Yeah.
Would that keep it hotter longer, or does that not necessarily matter as long as it's not boiling?
I don't think you'd need to keep it hotter longer. I don't think it would keep it hotter longer, but I don't think you need to keep it hotter longer either. When coffee's, I mean, when you're pulling a shot of espresso at a coffee shop, you're pulling it in 30 seconds. And it's not boiling water either. So, you know, I don't think you need to, it doesn't need to be a very long process, I don't think.
All right, Ryan, we have to take a break here. It's coffee and it's tea. Ron Greco, Mike Harney today, and the number is 800-348-2551. Oh, yeah. The caffeine's getting into my system now. It's going to be quite a show. Or not. We'll find out. Vox Pop Food Friday. Mike Harney from Harney & Sons Fine Teas is here. Ron Greco from Stack's Espresso Bar. We just talked about espresso. You know, you go to a good old Italian restaurant, they have a $9,000 espresso machine there. You can get some very expensive espresso machines, right?
Yeah.
What do they do?
I mean, $9,000.
This guy is doing it
pretty
on his,
cheap on the scale of commercial espresso machines.
What I'm saying
actually.
Is they're very elaborate. They're very nice to look at. I don't know what they do, but this guy was making it on his stovetop. Can you tell a huge difference?
Yes.
Really?
I hope so.
Do you have
so.
An espresso maker over there?
At the shops?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And how for Stack's Espresso
how
Bar.
How much did you pay? No, don't tell me. I don't want All right.
Considerably more than $9,000.
Really?
All right, for each one. Yeah.
Before we get to a couple of emails here, Mike, you know, we were talking about how long you brew the coffee and brew the espresso. I've screwed this up many times in making tea for my little ones. You leave it in too long. You don't leave it in long enough. What's the optimum time?
Well, it would vary on the type of tea. Now, you said that your daughters like green tea. And
no, they don't, as a matter of fact. They told me to get it, and they don't like it. I just got it the other day.
All right.
They
all
like
right.
various different teas, including these teas that are they even teas? They like the sleepiness and good night. And,
right, right. Well, tea comes from the tea plant, but many people, including your daughters, call herbs teas.
Well,
so
I don't.
You don't?
No.
All right.
I want real tea.
Well, you look like a real guy.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, continue.
All right, black tea, boiling water, 5 minutes is the standard. For green tea, it's less heat, less time.
Yeah.
So say 175 for Chinese green teas, a little bit less for Japanese green teas, and about 3 minutes instead of 5 minutes. So less heat, less time.
Huh. And white tea, is this very young tea?
Well, it is very young tea. It's a little bit like a pussy willow in the springtime where it's got the trichomes on the outside, the little hairs. And so I always say you can pet it like a cat. I didn't bring any up today, but it's got these lovely little furry things to them. And definitely there you use less heat and less time because it's the baby. It's the future of the tea plant.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I'll be darned. All right. Let's take a couple of quick emails here, and then we'll go to the phones. This one came in from Monica. And subject heading, Harney and Sons, Jasmine Pearl Tea. Does your Jasmine Pearl Tea contain caffeine?
Answer is yes.
Okay. And then she goes on, I'm interested in hearing anything else you would like to share about this tea, sourcing, history, brewing tips. Thank you in advance. That's from Monica.
Well, thank you, Monica. So jasmine tea comes from Fujian province in China, and that's the part that is near the water between Shanghai and Hong Kong.
Right.
And then they grow the white tea like you were talking about in the spring and harvest it when it's got a little bit of green on it. So it's not just the baby. It's got a little bit of – it's a teenager.
Maybe the green is slightly more mature?
Somewhere between 10 and 16.
Ah.
And in any event, they then dry the tea out a little bit so it doesn't change, and then they wait for a little later in the year for the jasmine flowers in June.
Yeah.
And then they roll it by hand, the jasmine pearls. That's why they look called pearls. And put the jasmine flowers. The tea sort of is dry, sucks up the all the oils and other things that are on the flowers, and they do that 7 times in a row. So that gives it the lovely jasmine flavor. And because it is a white-ish tea, it's not a white tea, but a whitish tea, it's got a lot of the sweetness that we referred to earlier, like you find in coffee.
And less caffeine as it's younger?
I would have a little bit less caffeine, yeah. Yeah.
All right. This one is from Dave in Olive Bridge. Glad to hear the Harney clan as well. The legacy of Mr. Harney lives through the passion and expertise of Michael and Paul. What recommendation is available for tea lovers who find that traditional as well as green teas are trouble on the stomach? And that's from Dave in Olive Bridge.
Well, thank you, Dave. A lot of times you could use an herbal. Something like a peppermint is good for an upset stomach. That would be something that you might want to try. Chamomile is a nice soothing herbal, and then we have all sorts of blends that put together flavors. If you find floral flavors are not very exciting for you,
you know, Jim doesn't approve of any of those those herbals.
You know,
being called teas, he's a tea traditionalist.
The thing is, before we get back to the phones, you alluded to this, Ron. One of the coffees you had was from. It was a different method, basically.
Yep. We have a natural process.
Let's talk about
process.
The terroir a little bit and the regions and the different sort of characteristics, both in coffee and tea, very quickly, and then we'll jump back on the phones. Give me the most popular region in your shop. In other words, most people say, I want it from
Ethiopia.
Yeah? Why?
There's a lot of different flavor profiles associated with Ethiopia. You know, it's the birthplace of coffee. It's the birthplace of pretty much everything. But it's the birthplace of coffee very definitively. And you can get Ethiopian coffees. Well, Mesopotamia and, you know, the birthplace
of
Sibylla.
Very definitively. what evidence do you have? All right, skip that.
Yeah,
well,
I
withdraw the question.
Even a tea guy knows that. Ethiopia is the only place you'll get heirloom varietal coffee from.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows wildly all throughout Ethiopia. But, you know, you can get coffee that has like really light florals and kind of delicate citrus notes. You can get coffee from Ethiopia that has very intense blueberry notes or strawberry, kind of berry flavored.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot there. There's a lot of sweetness. You know, there's very.
All right, compare it to Sumatra.
Regions. Sumatra, a good example, is extremely earthy. I mean, the notes that you'll often find on a bag of Sumatran coffee are like pipe tobacco, earthy, like, you know, extremely earthy coffees. And, you know,
and then Brazil?
Brazil.
They have an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
They do. They're the largest coffee exporters in the entire world. And the entire sea market, which is where the speculative commodities market where coffee is traded on, depends on. It fluctuates in relegation to Brazil's
harvest. So they're like
harvest.
OPEC.
Yeah.
If Brazil has a drought, the price of coffee across the entire world goes up very drastically.
And what is the flavor profile that you get from Brazil, obviously being a very big
nutty
place?
And chocolate.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, quickly, Mike, talk about some of the regions, the tea producers. You get teas from everywhere in the world, right?
Right. Well, actually, kind of interesting. The Kenya is the one that drives the world market for tea. So, if there's a drought in Kenya, which unfortunately there is often nowadays, that drives up the price. That's because the British, the Irish, they use that a lot in their basic breakfast blends, and so that's one that from a financial standpoint pushes the price of tea. We get a lot of tea from China, and our number one seller is hot cinnamon, but that's a blended tea. But English breakfast is a Chinese black tea for us.
Has the trade war affected your?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah, we pay quite a bit in tariffs.
Well, maybe that'll go away soon.
Supposedly it got cut in half, but we'll have to wait and see.
I think they have to sign it, though, this week, right?
That's true. Something like that. Well, I'll have to listen to WAMC, and then I'll know.
Yeah, me too. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Susan in Duanesburg, you've been waiting a while. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about coffee. Using a typical coffee maker like a Mr. Coffee, do you make a better pot of coffee using hot water or cold water?
Ah,
hot water.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it just requires – most home coffee makers are sort of underfunded in the energy department, and the reason a lot of them don't make really great coffee is because they're not getting hot enough.
I never knew this.
Yeah. So if you start with hot water, it has to expend less energy to get it to proper coffee brewing temperatures. Honestly, I would recommend boiling your water in a teapot and then adding it into your coffee maker. But at that point, you should probably just make a pour over and buy a scale and a home grinder and just go really far down the wormhole. So
or buy a $9,000 espresso machine.
Well, it's funny because our friends have a coffee maker that makes the water. The water is very hot, and then it perks through, and it really is a delicious cup of coffee. And my little coffee, and my little Mr. Coffee one is not so great. So I think I'm going to invest in a better coffee maker.
Good idea. Thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. I got to tell you, one of the best cups of coffee I ever had. I had many. Was from an old porcelain stovetop unit, or maybe it was electric. It was like a Corning. It was not a metal percolator, mm-hmm. but it was actually Corningware. I don't even know if you can get them anymore, but it made a tremendous cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I don't even know. They don't make them anymore, as far as I can tell. Let's go to Bill in Woodstock. Bill.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Happy New Year, and thanks for taking my call. I'm on a cell, so I'll ask my question and then get off.
Okay.
I'm always in search of a real good cup of coffee, and I look at it from this perspective. There's the beans, the water, and the maker. I bought really good coffee beans, and the coffee never tasted as well as it did when I bought it in the shop. Mm. And I'm wondering, is there a better way to make it? I've tried French press. I've done percolator. I've done drip. And I just heard the comment about the hot water, and that was part of my question, so I'm glad to hear that. So anything you can share with as to how I like a good, hearty, robust cup of coffee, and it just seems that I have not been able to match the quality of the restaurants at home.
Good question.
Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, Bill. Why is that?
There's a lot of factors there. One thing you didn't mention is the grinder. Hopefully he's still listening. Getting the correct grind size is a huge part of kind of, you know, hitting, as you said earlier, that optimal extraction.
And what
level.
Do you go for? Medium grind?
It depends on
grind.
The brew method, and it depends on how much coffee are you using. There's
say
a
I'm
million
using
factors.
A French press. What am I using for a grind?
You're going to go for coarse grind on French press.
Okay, why?
Because it's a full immersion method, and you're generally letting the coffee just sit in the water. So the finer the grind, the more surface area you have. And with full immersion, it's fully immersed. So it's completely saturated in water the entire time.
All right, what about the lousy 1987 coffee maker I use at my house? Fine grind?
Probably a medium. Is it flat bottom or cone?
Most things in my house are flat bottom, but that's a long story. No, yeah, it's just, it's a regular, yeah.
I'd say a medium grind.
All right, fair enough. Medium grind. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It's coffee today. Mike Harney from Harney & Sons Fine Teas. By the way, before we do that, what's with the hemp, Mike?
Well, the governor has passed last year a program to allow hemp and CBD products, if they're appropriately labeled.
I had some of this. I'm not high. I got to be honest with you.
Well, you're not going to. There's no THC.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was the whole thing with the farm bill.
All right, fine.
And so that's something that actually, just before Christmas, the governor just signed another bill to make the rules a little bit tighter. And so that's a CBD beverage, which allows you to calm down, which your wife might like.
What are you saying? No, actually, it's very delicious. Turmeric, right. Ginger, honey.
Turmeric, ginger, and honey.
But CBD, it doesn't do anything, right?
Well, it doesn't make you high. That's true.
Yeah, but I mean—
But it does allow— gets inflammations very big, drives down inflammation, allows you to calm down.
Have you seen this in your experience?
I have indeed. I've had to
swollen arm
partake.
Or something. You
swollen
down.
Right. That's it. You have to pay attention.
Really?
But no, it's something that many people think is very useful. My wife went to the doctors, complained of this ache, that ache. Next thing you know, they said take some topical CBD.
Oh, you're kidding me. The doctors say it now?
Yes, sir.
What does it do, though? I mean, is there empirical evidence for this?
Yes, sir. There's some.
Well, I like the taste, and that's the main thing. So this is, it says calm. It's not working for me yet as far as calmness goes.
Well, here's refresh.
Really?
Yeah.
I think we're probably
my career
going the wrong way with the coffee and the tea that you're drinking side by side with it. We're really negating the effects on that one.
I don't know what to do. Let's take a call. 800-348-2551. Daniel and Beacon, hello.
Hi. Hello. Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, my service is kind of bad here.
Okay.
I'm just feeding my dog. But I have a question about Lapsang Souchong tea.
Okay.
What about it?
So it's a smoked tea, and I drink a lot of it. I really like the smoky flavor. And I was wondering if there's any way that Harney & Sons can offer a smokier one.
Well,
and if they could also talk a little bit about the process that they use in the making of their Lapsang that they sell.
Sure. I was just up in the Lapsang area last spring, May, I guess it was, and it's a really lovely spot of China up in the Wuyi Mountains, and it's a UNESCO heritage site, so there's very little development up there. And steep mountains, and they harvest the trees, which they then smoke the tea over. But the idea is that it's the tea leaves after they're oxidized and they become fully oxidized, and a black tea. They then put little fires underneath them, and they let them burn for a couple hours, and the tea gets picks up the smoky flavor. So that's the original one. As you said, there is a certain demand for smokiness, and I believe Ron was talking about the Sumatra and people like the darker flavors. So we bought one from Taiwan, that had a lot of smoky flavors. And then we started doing Japanese whiskey tea. So it's a black tea from Japan, which is very rare. And then they leave it in whiskey barrels. And so it gets that sort of smoky flavor. And then we just did one, another one ourselves, which is bourbon cask, we call it. So lots of choices for smokiness.
Daniel, thank you very much for the call. Bourbon cask tea. How long would you leave it in there?
Well, this one we put flavors, but we did buy some old granddad bourbon barrels, and we've put them in there for a month so far. We're waiting to see exactly what happens, if anything. People have done that, but we thought we'd experiment ourselves.
That's a very interesting idea.
I had a gin barrel aged coffee once, and it was the worst thing I've ever had in my entire life.
It's possible to be bad.
It was horrendous.
I got to tell you, gin and coffee. I love gin.
I love coffee. Not I wouldn't put a them complimentary together. Taste at all. I've had some great, whiskey barrel aged, whiskey cask aged, which is a little bit more, or bourbon barrel, and I think it depends on the age of the barrel. Also, this seemed like when you opened it, it reeked of gin.
Oh, that's
before
bad.
You even brewed it. And man, I couldn't stomach. I had to throw the whole thing out.
Did you put some tonic water in it? Or?
It was horrendous.
Okay, now we're entering my level of absurdity here. Yes, coffee, gin.
We do an espresso espresso tonic in the summer, which is nice.
That's fully appalling. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. Yeah, we'll take a quick break here, Zach, the engineer. And I'll tell you what, we'll be back with Mike Harney from Harney & Sons Teas, Ron Greco from Stack's Espresso Bar. More of your calls coming up. Government Mule with John Schofield. That's nice. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Coffee and tea today. Ron Greco from Stack's Espresso Bar. Mike Harney from Harney & Sons Fine Teas. And I'm starting to get a little caffeine buzz here. How much caffeine is in... Oh, thank you. It's a cookie shaped like a dog. Thank you very much. Shortbread, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Very nice. Thank you very much for this. How much caffeine is in a general cup of tea?
In a general?
Not white tea, not green tea, but a general black tea, a sort of a morning blend.
Right. Well, so generally you have to drink 3 cups of tea to equal 1 cup of coffee.
Okay.
And it varies depending upon the type of tea it is and how it's brewed. But the purpose of caffeine from the tea plant's part is it's a bug repellent. And
no
so
way.
Yeah. So the stuff that needs the most repellent, young leaves. Gets the most caffeine. So that's white tea, green tea.
Has more caffeine?
Yes, sir.
I'll be darned.
Yep,
now, that seems counterintuitive to me, and also counterintuitive, something I heard, and maybe, Ron, you can tell me if it's true or not, that a lighter roast has more caffeine than a darker roast.
This is a raging debate on the internet.
Really?
Of coffee nerds, yeah.
True or not? You're the expert.
Probably technically true, but also a light roast coffee is... a more dense coffee, which makes it less soluble. So because of that, when you have if you're just going by the amount of caffeine actually stored inside of each individual bean, a light roast has more coffee. If you go by the amount of caffeine that ends
up in the cup,
it arguably comes close because a dark roast is more soluble.
So it's about the same.
It's probably about the same.
And what are you brewing over there?
I am brewing a Geisha Village Natural Process Ethiopian from Black and White Coffee.
We discussed this earlier. And so this is, you have the cherry, it ferments inside the cherry, and then you clear out all the muck. What do they call the mucilix?
Mucilage.
Mucilage.
I think that's a medicine.
Mucilix. All right. Well, while that's finishing up, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Carrie in Albany.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I use a pour-over method, and I tend to like Ethiopian Sumatra, and if I can get Jamaican coffee, I will use that. My question is this. Occasionally, I will run into a coffee that tastes sort of winey. I really, really don't like that flavor, and I'm wondering if you can talk about, you know, what kinds of coffees I might avoid that might tend to have that wine flavor.
Wine flavor?
Going to hang up and listen to your answer.
Thanks, Carrie. Is there such a thing as wine flavor coffee?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Avoid coffees from Africa, but most prominently Kenya.
Hmm.
Red wine is like very often listed as a flavor note of, to me, that's one of the really desirable aspects of a great Kenya is that it's got this sort of red wine, deep red fruit flavor.
Now, I love this that you brought up flavor notes. It seems to me like this is kind of a subjective thing.
100%.
Like I see the bag here that you have,
bag,
and it
yeah.
says chocolate, and let's see, this is your Lark Street. Milk chocolate, hazelnut, soft citrus, balance.
Well, read the back of the bag.
It says we taste, though, so I like that. So you're implying it's subjective. What am I supposed to read here?
The part that says taste is subjective right across the back.
Oh, taste is subjective. There you are. Thank you very much. Then why put it on there?
Because it gives, I mean, you know, a coffee where you taste wine, most people are not going to say, I taste intense earthiness. So right. It at least kind of gives it a direction.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this is what we taste. You know, we cup this coffee and these are sort of some of the flavor notes that came out to us. And we want to give people an idea of, you know, this one's milk chocolate, hazelnut, soft citrus balance. And we've also got a comforting to adventurous scale on our bags, and this is much more to the comforting side, and it's because it's our house blend. So that gives, you know, if you're bringing home coffee for Thanksgiving and you're trying to please a lot of people, I'd recommend probably going for one that's more on the comforting side and more towards the you know, milk chocolate nutty side, because it's going to be closer to what most people think of as tasting like coffee.
But if now, you don't like your relatives, you get the adventurous.
This Geisha Village says floral, mango, pomegranate, honey.
Right.
So, you know, that if you have a really adventurous family, that's great. But if you're trying to please grandma, who's a traditionalist, you know, that might not be the way to go.
But are there chemicals involved that lead to this subjective?
Yes.
Okay. And do we know, have we isolated what they are?
I'm sure there are people that could tell you better answers than me. There are definitely very specific acids that are in coffee. And when you
Kenyan coffee tasting like wine, there would be a specific profile that maybe there's a little more of
lactose
acid.
There's an acid test on the, there's a Q grader certification, which is a green Arabica coffee grader.
Mm-hmm.
It's 22 tests, and one of them is an organic acid test, and you have to be able to identify citric acid, malic acid, quinic acid, lactic acid, and its individual concentrations in these flavor samples.
This email came in from Mike. I love my coffee. However, I've been trying to cut down on caffeine consumption due to some health concerns. Do your experts have any recommendations for a good, full-flavored decaf? There, I said it. Decaf.
I love decaf coffee.
Do you really?
I do. I like drinking coffee at night, but I'm, you know, pretty sensitive to caffeine, which is frustrating because it's my job to taste coffees.
Do you have a good decaf?
We are sourcing a new decaf right now, but we're getting in a great sugarcane processed Colombian decaf.
Is it tough to do? Tough to make? Well?
I think a lot of places don't give the attention to it that it is deserved.
And how do you make it?
It's the same way you make normal coffee.
No. I know how you make it.
How do you decaffeinate it?
All right.
It's kind of a complicated process, but there's, I believe it's a soaking of the green bean for a certain amount of time to let the caffeine flow out of the bean and into the water, and then there's an absorption via charcoal. And there's several different processes as well.
This one's from Burger. I drink tea, black, green, herbal, whatever, for pleasure, but understand that green teas in particular offer some health benefits as well. I generally use boiling or near-boiling water to brew my teas, sometimes make sun tea if the weather cooperates, also enjoy the result of cold brewing coffee. So my question is, if the time involved is not a problem for me, would cold brewing tea in the fridge overnight be effective, both in terms of getting good flavor extraction and making the most of the healthful components? Or do you need that boiling-ish water?
Well, we always recommend boiling water. Sometimes, you know, that's why tea was so popular in the beginning, because it would take water that had a problem and sanitize it by killing all the bacteria that's in there. So that's one reason we avoid cold brew. Another thing is, like Ron was talking about earlier, is over-extraction. So you get a lot of the bitterness that comes out.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, with green tea, less heat, less time. So 12 hours in a fridge is definitely less temperature,
but
more time. So I don't go out of my way, but the people are always right.
Huh. I don't know about that. This coffee's very good. What do we have here? This is the Geisha?
Yeah, that's
really
correct.
Nice taste. Tell me about this.
Well, the Geisha varietal is, famous is maybe not the word for normal people, but it's definitely famous in the coffee world.
Outstanding.
It's a very rare varietal, and it repeatedly sets the highest price per paid ever for green coffee.
So it's not from Japan?
Huh?
It's not from Japan?
No, it's not from Japan.
Yeah.
It was originally grown in the Gori Geisha Forest, which is why it's named that. There has been a lot of cultural appropriation around the, you know, traditional Japanese geisha imagery to promote the geisha varietal. It's from the Gori Geisha Forest, and it was... It kind of rose to prominence in Panama in 2004. It had been largely sort of forgotten about, and this farm called Hacienda La Esmeralda, the Peterson family, entered it into the Best of Panama competition in 2004, which is a growing competition that focuses on the producers, the roasters, and it just kind of swept the competition. You know, a coffee from Central America that would normally have more of the flavor profile of a Central American coffee all of a sudden tasted like a coffee from Ethiopia.
Mm.
It had this wonderful floral, tropical fruit,
yeah,
mango flavors. And this is an Ethiopian geisha, but the geisha varietal rose to prominence in that Best of Panama competition in 2004. And now people in the specialty coffee world sort of can't get enough of it. Record price per pound was set at over $2,200 per pound.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Really?
Green, unroasted, yeah.
Who's buying that?
High-end foreign businessmen
to give
as gifts, typically.
Right. That's a good chunk of change.
There's no way to make a pound of coffee profitable when it costs $2,000 to before it's even roasted, you know, so
where does this stand on the adventurous scale?
I would say this is pretty far on the adventurous scale. This was not roasted by us, so it doesn't have an adventurous scale. This was roasted by Black and White Coffee Roasters, which is two gentlemen named Lem Butler and Kyle Ramage. Lem Butler was, I believe, the 2015 U.S. Barista Competition winner. He then coached Kyle Ramage to winning the 2016 U.S. Barista Competition. They formed a roasting company together, and many, many, many of their coffees are far on the adventurous scale, but they are excellent. They are our current guest roaster.
It has
right
delicate
now.
Hints of vermouth.
It does. It's good.
Let's go to Barbara in Palinville. Barbara.
Hi there. I thank you for taking my call,
sure.
And since Mr. Harney himself is there, I thought I would direct the question to him, and this concerns a product that is universal with all non-bulk tea, and it's the tea bag that I'm concerned about. In my nearby town of Woodstock, there's a tea shop. I believe all of their tea is Harney and Sons tea, and all the tea bags are this like plastic tea bag that doesn't biodegrade. And I heard that you know, you're ingesting like microplastics when you have your tea. So if I'm somewhere and I get that tea, I'll take it home and I'll put it in a tea ball. But have people been expressing concern about it? Is this like the way of the future?
All right, Mike,
we get back to paper?
All right, Mike, what do you think?
Well, quite a few things there. Of course, there's loose tea that's always available. There's the paper tea bag. And then just back in October, there was a report that came out that suggested there might be problems with our sachets. We listened to those, and we are adjusting what we're making the sachet out of because it's a reasonable concern.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason sachets exist is convenience. You don't need a strainer. It's portion controlled. So we're switching to something that we hope won't be have any negative to it. And I have a nice composting garden myself, so I understand the story.
Well, Barbara, thanks for the call. Let's zip over to Sarah in Schenectady. Sarah.
Happy 2020, and thank you for your education. I've learned a lot just listening to you. My question is regarding Earl Grey tea. My favorite is Bigelow, and I know that that's more commercial. I've tried as many Earl Grey teas as I can, but the robustness of the Bigelow doesn't seem to be matched by any others. Could you suggest one I may try?
Well, the Bigelows are a great family. They started in the tea business a little bit before us. And Cindy Bigelow is approximately my age, and so she's doing a great job down there in southern Connecticut.
Do you know her?
I've met her a couple of times, and her father's and mother are great people,
too. You guys get along?
Of course.
Okay. All right.
You know, everybody's bergamot choice is, which is the lemony flavor that you like so much, is one. My dad found one, or actually this British guy found one for him 40-some years ago. So we've always bought it from the same company. And then it would be the base tea that would make it more robust. I know Bigelow, with their tea bags, uses finer cut, so just like we were talking about the size of the coffee bean, the same thing with the tea leaf. If it's real fine, makes a brisker, stronger cup of tea.
Aha.
So that's probably what she likes.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for the call, and now over to Samara in Middletown.
Hello. I have a question for you guys. So I was wondering how you guys take caffeine out of cheese.
Yeah, I was asking that to Ron. It seems like it might be a complicated process.
How is it for tea?
Oh, tea.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, how is it for tea?
Oh, tea. How do you do it out of tea?
I was waiting for you to ask.
All right, Mike, how do you get the caffeine out of tea?
Well, it's actually what they take is the leaves, and they put there's two methods. One way is liquid carbon dioxide. So they take a room like this, and they compress the carbon dioxide, and it gets smaller and smaller and makes the gas into a liquid. They put it on top of tea leaves, and then it has a better affinity. It weakens the affinity of caffeine molecule in there, and next thing you know, caffeine's off, and they dry it.
Now, wait a minute. Now, to get liquid carbon dioxide, it's got to be very cold, right?
Well, it's pressure is the thing. So they just make it into a supercritical. We'd have to go to RPI or something like that to get the real thing.
But doesn't that destroy the leaves?
No.
Interesting.
Makes it into a liquid, and then that's one way that they do it. And then there's also another way, which we use for tea bags. Does that answer your question?
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah,
that's my question. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. And let's see, who's been waiting longest here? Oh, we go to Heather. Heather in Salisbury, Connecticut. You're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. You've sort of answered most of my questions. I had for Christmas your, winter blues, which had four delicious tins of tea, and one of them was the blueberry green, and I was surprised that it had caffeine in it, but you said that all green teas have caffeine, correct?
Yes, Heather. I hope everything's okay in Salisbury.
Well, it is right now. It's not snowing.
I'm not there,
or anything.
Right.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, right. So that's correct. It has no. And then the other question is the tea bags. I usually use loose tea. And as you can tell, I'm from England, where it was one teaspoonful of tea per person and one for the pot, which was far too strong for me now. But it does say that the tea bags make two cups. And I find, how much tea is in a tea bag of teaspoons?
It's around 2 grams.
And how much is that as a teaspoon? I should know that.
Well, it's like a teaspoon. It's more or less like a teaspoon.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, mm-hmm. Great.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Heather. All right. We only have a minute or so here. All right. Let's just do this. Ron, how do people find Stax Espresso Bar on the web?
StaxEspresso.com.
Can you say it slower?
Stax, STACKS, Espresso, ES, as in Samuel, PRESSO.com.
That's too slow. Michael.
Also, one sec. I just want to wish my mom happy birthday.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot all about it. Happy birthday, Ron's mom. That's very exciting. Michael, how do people find Harney & Sons?
Harney.com.
Harney.com.
H-A-R-N-E-Y.
Well, this was a lot of fun, and I got to say, I learned a lot today. I'm going to be able to sleep. I think I mellowed out. I had some of the CBD beverage. I feel calm now. Thank you both for being here very much. Support comes from Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, celebrating 20 years, now indoors for the winter at the Troy Atrium, Saturdays 9 to 2, featuring live music with CC Vagabonds tomorrow, troymarket.org. Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family offering authentic Italian cooking and hospitality to downtown Albany and organizing tours to Italy for over 37 years. CafeCapriccio.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, providing the greater capital region with custom display cases, interactive exhibits, and rental gallery walls for trade shows, museums, and pop-up events. EmpireExhibits.com. Thanks once again to Ron Greco of Stax Espresso Bar and Michael Harney of Harney & Sons Fine Teas for joining us today. Thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. I'm sorry if we didn't get to you. We'll do it again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Kayleen White. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for being with us, and we will have a Medical Monday for you on Monday at 2 p.m. Enjoy your weekend. Stand by now for the best of our knowledge.